Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Stories Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is episode number 113. Lucky number 113.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the Dirty Dozen. The Dirty Baker's Dozen.
Oh, yeah. The Dirty Baker's Dozen on 113. Right. Yeah.
But, yeah, the Dirty Dozen. Lee Marvin. Lee Marvin, huh. Leading people.
So tough.
He is.
So tough.
Yeah, this is our second World War II visit in a row. I love it.
I know. All World War II, all the time.
That's right. So this was directed. Okay, it's a 1967 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Robert Aldrich. Is he someone that you know a lot of?
Okay. I kind of looked at some of the other movies he did, and none of them really rang a bell the way this one did.
Yeah.
That yeah, I remember.
Yeah, nothing that I remember either. You know, just looking through them really fast. Maybe Kiss Me Deadly, I believe I've seen. Another noir movie.
No.
The Flight of the Phoenix. With
heard of that.
Jimmy Stewart and Richard Crowe.
Yeah, but haven't seen it.
How about The Frisco Kid with a young Harrison Ford and Gene Wilder?
Oh, I might have heard of that too, but
yeah, Gene
I
Wilder
didn't
played
watch
a Jewish guy, I believe, in that one.
Okay, no,
no, not ringing a bell.
I mean, no.
Okay,
maybe I saw the ads, but
well, cool.
That combination doesn't sound auspicious to me.
Okay, gotcha.
Now you'd seen this movie before.
I had. You bet. I went through a period, maybe 5 years ago, where I watched every World War II movie I could find.
Wow.
And this was one of them.
Well, duh.
Yeah. It's funny, The Dirty Dozen and The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, you picked The Magnificent Seven.
I wanted another ensemble movie, and I almost went with The Great Escape, which is probably the greatest ensemble movie ever made. I mean, for one thing, it has Steve McQueen, so right there. But I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But I wanted something that wasn't so nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things happen, but in general, it's a little bit more Magnificent Seven-ish in that way, you know? And I don't know why, but I just was like, I haven't seen The Dirty Dozen in so long. For some reason, I thought it had a bit more overlap in the stars. It turns out just good old Charlie Bronson is the only one who made it to both of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's
so
in everyone.
Uh-huh. I like him. Yeah, Lee Marvin, Ernest Borgnine, Charles Bronson, Jim Brown.
George Kennedy.
Yeah, George Kennedy.
Telly Savalas.
Telly Savalas. Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, very young and early. And how about John Cassavetes? Oh, my gosh. I've never really cared about him or the movies that he's directed or anything, but this, I just was mesmerized. He was so feral. It was just wonderful, and consistently so. He just had that wild, crazy look the whole time.
He did. He was definitely the random element who could mess up any moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when they said these guys didn't like authority, he didn't like any authority, and he was not kidding.
That's right.
Well, I was surprised when I was kind of looking around about the movie that this was a groundbreaking movie at the time in the level of violence and in the fact that it didn't show just good guys like, you know, The Great Escape. You can pretty much love everyone. They may be weak, but it's not because they're awful. It's because they've unexpectedly gone blind and they want to escape too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so this one, because they start off with the dozen of convicts who are all, whether for right or wrong, I notice all our favorite people, they were pretty much, they, you know, we could side with them in their case. which was kind of stacking the deck. You want, you know, these Jim Brown, you want him to make it, man. And this, though, opened the door for a lot more violence and to have unlikable characters. And I remember when I read that, I was so surprised because I could remember watching this like on, I don't know, Saturday night at the movies with my family and my dad sitting there going, Jim Brown, he's going to run. You know why they have him running, don't you? He was the fastest, you know, runner for football, blah, 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 blah. You know, so my whole family was watching it. And I don't think they were cutting anything out.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the violence goes, there was, mm-hmm. you know, we'll talk about the end later, but, you know, that was a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But the, you know, as far as the violence throughout the movie, I didn't find that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, I'm living in 2015, so
every watch
is full of that almost.
I know. So it made me think about Inglourious Basterds, which I didn't see specifically because I heard, I mean, Quentin Tarantino loves violence for its own sake, and I just feel like he was probably weaned on this movie when I heard that. Mm-hmm. But the other thing about the unlikable heroes, you know, you want them all to make it out no matter what, even though some of them are not very nice people. Okay, Telly Savalas, you want him to die. You want him to die as soon as he can.
Right, he was... Really? I mean, that was a good job because I was creeped out by him from the moment I saw him.
Oh, he was great.
Yeah, he did an excellent job.
Yeah.
So quick summary. Let's talk about what this movie is.
Okay, so Lee Marvin doesn't really fit in.
Yeah.
They think he'd be perfect for this mission.
Right, he's a major.
Yeah.
Major Reisman.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so Ernest Borgnine is the general, which I love watching him play something where he's a bit more an authority.
I love Ernest Borgnine.
He's so great, but he doesn't get to play parts like that much.
I know, that's for sure. He's usually, the trod upon guy.
Yeah.
Sidekick.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so he's called in and said, yeah, well, we're going to kind of forget these other things because we think you're the perfect guy to do this mission where we've got 12 convicts we've picked out, army convicts that, you know, they've done horrible things. They've been court-martialed. And the least penalty, I think, is maybe 10 years of hard labor. But most of them have 20 years of hard labor or they're going to be executed very soon.
Yeah.
And so he's pretty much given no choice. He has to do it. And there's, of course, the full cast of characters. George Kennedy is the guy who kind of likes him. He's like the secretary or aide to the general who is kind of giving him little tips on how to get through all this. You've got, you know, the stick-up-your-butt guy who just wants to get him any way he can. So he's got that on one side. And then on the other side, you see him going and talking to all the convicts who are going to be trouble no matter what, whether because they're psycho, and I'm looking at Telly Savalas, or just because they don't care. Like Jim Brown's like, I hate all white men. You guys have been so unfair to me. But anyway, they all eventually agree, of course, as we know they will, and they go out and start training for this incredible mission that is truly incredible. No one could ever believe this mission would happen, but it's that there's a chateau in Rennes, France, where it's used as like a weekend resort or vacation type spot for all the higher up generals of the German army and, you know, high ranking people.
Yeah.
So their job is to sneak in there right before D-Day and bring it down. So none of these guys will be around. And the rest of it disrupts
all of their command structure.
Right. That's it.
So it's an impossible mission. You know, they're given, you do this or just take your sentence.
Well, and if they do it, they'll get off.
Right.
They'll let them go back into the army with their former rank and that sort of thing.
And then, Lee Marvin has to lead them. He has to figure out how to get these individuals to work as a team.
That dirty dozen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's full of all the classic training things, but with the element of they all are rogues and ready to go off on each other at any moment.
Yeah.
And then you see it all the way through the mission. I don't know how much more of a description.
That's pretty much a description. So yeah, it's just a movie about these 12 guys and their captain or their major, and how they come together and how they pull off what they pull off or don't pull off what they pull off.
Yeah, and they did a good job, I thought, of showing you just enough of the main, probably six of the dozen that you cared about.
Right, and Charles Bronson probably was the leader of those. I mean,
yeah.
I think we saw the most. Charles Bronson was who we saw the most, I believe.
Yeah, he and then Jim Brown was close to equal with him. Mm-hmm. They were always the two who were giving each other significant looks, and you knew they were the leaders.
Yeah.
For whatever, Victor Frankl.
Yeah, and then Franco. Yeah, Victor Franco. We saw a lot of him too, and that's John Cassavetes, right? You said that, and I didn't know that he was a director or anything like that. But yeah, he was terrific.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of his first roles, and he went on and he acted in some other things, and he directed some movies, and I think they were always very hard-edged sort of movies, you know, and he was great, and there were some other people in there, you know, you had Trini Lopez, who played his guitar and sang part of a song, because that was his thing, but it all worked.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, of course, is... you want to see at the end, by the time that you get to the end, you're invested in the characters and you want to see it come off. And plus, kind of the refreshing thing about this is it's nice to have a definite bad guy. You know, you feel sorry for the mistresses and the wives who are there too, but you know, the Germans are bad. They should all die.
that's something, you know, at the end, you know, we need to get into spoiler territory, but.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then the training, as they learn to come together as a team, is always fun in any of these kind of movies. Because what you see is the way Lee Marvin has to figure it out. Because partway in, they have a psychiatrist come in, and I guess, or psychologist, whichever. And he winds up sticking with Lee Marvin and kind of acting as his Greek chorus or the sounding board the whole time. Mm. And he's evaluated everyone, and he's like, okay, you're insane. This is never going to work. These guys are all crazy.
Yeah. So. Right. And it was crazy.
Yeah, it was.
Crazy and a heck of a lot of fun.
Crazy, so the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole movie is so much fun. It's you watch it, it just makes me happy watching it. You know, you talk about the violence and stuff, but I don't really remember anything except for the end. As far as, you know, things that were shocking in any way, but it was just, it was fun to watch. It was it was a good movie.
Well, that was it. It was the end. And also maybe, and I don't know, nobody seemed to mention this, but I remember looking back thinking, I wonder what people thought when Lee Marvin bust in a whole truckload of prostitutes for their graduation ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess everybody would just kind of accept that these are not very nice men anyway. And this is a kind of reward that they would understand. And these prostitutes are certainly willing. And the thing that I thought was really sweet, well, I mean, I don't think this is spoiler territory, but instead of when the door closes behind Lee Marvin, everybody's kind of shy. You know, they haven't been around women in so long. And so they turn on the music and they dance some.
Yeah.
Because what they want before they want the rest of it is they need the connection and a little tenderness.
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed that before, but I thought that was a nice moment because it affirmed them as human beings.
Yeah, as human beings, you bet. Except for Telly Savalas.
Oh, no. He had to be on the guard tower.
Yeah, and that was...
about strumpets and harlots.
That's hilarious that they put him up there. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Cool.
All right, well, yeah, let's jump into spoiler territory. But
yeah, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, there's not much else to say about it. But yeah, definitely give it a watch if you're interested.
If you haven't seen it, where have you been living on Mars? Yeah. Come on.
You bet. All right, we're there.
Okay.
So just quickly about the end. You know, you were talking about the Germans and, you know, clear bad guys and stuff. I think that you know, for myself, I had to remind myself at some point when the end was happening that, okay, yeah, these are Germans. Because we don't see right. in the movie the Germans do anything, right?
Right.
So they didn't in the movie establish that the Germans are really, really bad, right? But it's almost like, okay, audience, you know that the Germans are really, really bad.
Right.
So when, you know, they have to get rid of these leaders and they're doing it for the right reasons. But the way they do it is uncomfortable.
Well, especially
I'm like,
since, yeah,
they're you just lock them in there and leave them and.
Well, they're throwing the grenades down and they're pouring the gas down. Well, that wasn't the mission, man.
Yeah, I know.
But you pour the everything down and they show everybody, you know, frantically with their hands trying to get rid of the grenades. And there are plenty of feminine arms in there and they're screaming and everything. And so you do forget at that moment that it doesn't matter why they're doing it. This is a brutal act. And that was... I'm sure that's one of the things that they were talking about. I mean, Roger Ebert, it was the first year he was a movie critic.
Uh-huh.
And he gave it 3 stars, but he lambasted in the last third of his review the movie censors or critics, I guess the rating people. He says, oh, this must have been a scandal that year. He goes, Haley Mills, Naked Bottom, you slap this rating on it, but people are walking around burning to death and you do nothing. That's okay. And I thought... And he kept going on about it. And I was like, was there a cut version of the movie I watched? Because you know what's happening and that's bad enough. It doesn't matter who the people are. That's terrible. But I was like, I don't remember seeing all these details. And we looked it up and finally I decided that he must have just been projecting. Because he said, seeing him walk around burning. And I'm like, I don't remember that.
I don't remember walking around burning either, but... It was just uncomfortable, you know, throwing the grenades down there and then dumping the gasoline down there. And just like, oh, my gosh. And then, you know, Jim Brown, you know, lit them all on fire and ran out of there. And I just thought, oh, my gosh.
Well, he dropped grenades down.
Yeah.
He dropped grenades without pins, so they were going to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and in fact, right before they were going to pour the gasoline down, you see the guy who's the sergeant, who's another one of those character actors who's just very, I always find him very likable. He stands there for just a moment. He hesitates, and he's got this look on his face like, but he does it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at
somebody
that point.
Somebody else did it too, yeah. There's this moment of, this is tough, man.
This is, you know, war is hell, right?
Right, and I think that was.
The right reason, they're trying to win the war.
Yeah. And you have to do awful
way towards that, yeah,
in a war. And I think that was one of the other things they said is this is one of the first movies to kind of really show here's some of the brutal things that happen in a war. But I know that the director, because when I found that out, I went, well, what did the director think? And the director just went, this is a good action flick. I'm not worried about that. That's not a problem. And he was trying to make it liven up what he thought was a dull script. And to him, the Dirty Dozen was about camaraderie and how even the most unlikely men can act valiantly when placed in the right circumstances. And that's what we respond to.
Yeah, I agree.
By the end, they're all heroes to us because they've come together, they've supported each other. Well, except for Telly Savalas.
Except for Telly Savalas, yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Telly Savalas, that was one of those things where I didn't understand why Lee Marvin wouldn't get rid of Telly Savalas when he had the chance. But
that was
then you find out at one point why he kept Victor Franco. Because, you know, he said, oh, I love that Victor Franco. Remember he said that?
Because he made them into a team.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, you know, if it was my team, I'd say, okay, I've got to. Archer Maggot, right?
Yeah.
I've got to get rid of those two guys. Maggot is the guy Telly Savalas plays.
What a great
name. Yeah, but I guess he really didn't have a choice to get rid of anybody, but...
Well, the psychiatrist acted like, he said, at least let me get rid of Maggot.
And so maybe he had that opportunity.
Yeah, and the only thing he said was, nope, the Army's going with the starting lineup, and I thought, okay, that is... there are a lot of holes in this. You can't look at it too closely, but I was like, that's a huge hole because of the clear and obvious psycho value of this guy. And I was like, you should have given him some talent that no one else had.
Right. So a reason to keep him, because there really wasn't a reason.
Yeah, exactly. So that, well, I know, but I got no one else who can, you know, throw grenades and juggle at the same time or whatever it is.
Whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And then there was Donald Sutherland.
He was a moron.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that scene where he was the general. Who wants to be a general? And then he inspected the troops. That was so funny.
And did it perfectly.
Yeah.
Well, and they said that Clint Walker was supposed to be the character who did it, and he declined because of he felt it was disrespectful to his Native American blood. If I'm remembering that right, I'm like,
interesting.
Why would that be? Maybe I'm remembering the wrong thing. I don't know. And I went,
that's interesting. I'm looking at Clint Walker now, so he was in some westerns and things, huh? He's not an actor that I knew before.
I feel like maybe he was on TV, or maybe, you know, my parents had watched some movies that he was in, so I knew who he was.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to say, I don't know if you noticed this, but did you notice that Charles Bronson and Clint Walker quite often were only wearing, you know, they didn't have jackets, they were wearing skin-tight T-shirts?
Yeah.
You saw lots of muscles and everything, and I mentioned it to my husband. He goes, hey, the Army has shirts in one size, small. I went, and God bless him for it.
Oh, too funny.
It may be James Brown, but I feel like he had his coat on a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But anyway, it was so funny.
That is funny.
Or Jim Brown. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was neat. And I loved the whole scene. Well, the section of the movie where they were doing war games.
Yes.
That was a heck of a lot of fun.
I'd forgotten that altogether until they went into it. And then I went, oh, yay. I didn't realize how well I knew the movie, but.
Yeah, and they were like, you know, we're going to change the color of our armbands at will. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. What are you talking about? This is war.
Yeah, he says, we'll change them back. Don't worry. Well, and it also showed you the general had some smarts because he was observing and seeing things, and he just watched enough to see what was going on and went, okay,
yeah,
I'm going to leave now.
And that colonel guy.
Yeah, we wanted him to get it, and he did. It was great. Yeah, it was a clever plan. And I tend to only remember George Kennedy, who was the general's aide, as the guy with the hook in Charade. I don't know if you know that movie.
No, I don't.
It's Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn, and it's a really charming movie from around this time period. But George Kennedy is a definite horrible, horrible person in it. So I tend to think of him only playing those people, and I have no idea. He may have had a very broad range. So I really enjoyed watching him play this good guy, you know, who was appreciating the jokes and helping Lee Marvin out.
That's cool. I don't know that I've seen George Kennedy play that kind of character.
Mm.
I mean, the kind that you're describing. Mm-hmm. The kind that he was in this movie is what I know him for.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I've never seen him do anything else, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe I have and don't recall. But
against type or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. So one thing I did think of, though, because I was going, I got nothing. I just wanted to watch the movie, you know.
Uh-huh.
But when I was thinking about the director's statement that the Dirty Dozen is about camaraderie and how the most unlikely men can act valiantly in the right circumstances, I was like, Dirty Dozen. Wait a minute. I was like, I know this is a super stretch, but I started thinking about the 12 disciples and going, could you find a more different group of people who had to have one unifying force that sent them out? I don't know if they had camaraderie, all of them, but enough that they went out and carried on the mission. You know, and I was like, that is a super stretch, but that is what it made me think of.
Oh, because, that's interesting.
Because none of them were, well, maybe Paul. Paul was upper class and very educated. But most of them were, you know, as fishermen, a tax collector, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
and I thought, yeah, that's that universal thing that we like to see in the movie.
I don't know why I didn't make that connection, but I didn't. you know, dozen and a dozen. That's interesting.
Well, I didn't pick it for that reason, obviously. Yeah. they do a lot of things I don't want to ever think of a disciple ever doing. Blowing people
I don't
up.
Think they had this time.
What?
I don't think they had hand grenades in Jesus' time.
No, but they had spears. Knives. Well, Peter cuts off swords. He cuts off, is it a soldier's or a servant's ear?
Oh, yeah.
When they're coming to take Jesus away from the Garden of Gethsemane.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And Jesus is like, those who live by the sword die by the sword. And then he heals the guy's ear.
Yeah.
Because he's a class act.
Yeah, it's always interesting to think about, you know, the disciple story. You know, just if you sit there, you know, when you're reading the Gospels and you think, okay, well, what on earth? You know, it says things, you know, in a very short number of sentences. And then, but when you think about what they did and what they left and how, mm-hmm. like, 1 minute, next minute, they followed Jesus, that's an incredible thing that, you know, is in three sentences. Or, you know, in the gospel, you know, when you sit there and you think about what would it have taken for me to do that, it must have been really remarkable.
Yeah, and think that, how compelling it must have been to have him look at you and say that. I mean, there must have been this amazing connection. I mean, because the story where he tells, you know, Peter's been fishing and he hasn't caught anything, and Jesus says, go back out and cast your net. And he's like, well, okay, but, you know, I'm a master fisherman. This isn't, you know, it's not going to work. And then there's so much they have to bring in another boat.
Yeah.
And he immediately gets out and is kneeling at Jesus' feet.
Yeah.
I mean, that it has to be something instantaneous like that, a connection that you just don't get any other way.
Yeah, it would have to be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I mean, think of Matthew. He was a tax collector. I believe he was sitting at his table collecting taxes. He just stood up and left all that money. Okay.
Yep, he's like, okay, this is meaningless now. I've got to go do that.
Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible, you know. Yeah, and it's I don't think people stop and think about that, you know, where you know, we hear that on Sunday, you know, at church and
yeah,
but just to think about what that really says is amazing.
He was no Lee Marvin. He wasn't going around going, I'm going to save your neck. Mm-hmm. I mean, in essence he was, but not in a way that anybody'd understand, and he didn't bother using those terms.
Yeah, he actually, well, you know, that is kind of a parallel to that, isn't it? It's like you know, saying, well, I don't know, you know, the disciples at the very beginning, they knew that they were in trouble too, as far as, you know, we want you to drop everything that you know, and you're going to... And that had to feel very dangerous as well as exhilarating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certainly by the time crucified, they knew that this was not easy.
Yeah.
That they were in great danger all the time.
Oh, well, yeah, that's why nobody was there except the beloved disciple.
Right.
And the women, some of the women, because... They unfortunately did what I probably would have done. Like, oh, no. You know?
Yeah.
Which is why...
And that would tend to bring you together, not unlike, you know, this movie.
You know, I didn't think of that.
Well, you brought up the disciples, but it's like,
right.
You know, how does a group of disparate people come together as a team, you know, in this case... Self-preservation, I guess,
mm-hmm.
in the Dirty Dozen, but then it wasn't really that because they were still separate until they were threatened, I guess.
Right, that's a good point.
Yeah, and then once they were threatened together as a group,
mm-hmm.
and rebelled as a group, that's when they was glue there.
Mm-hmm. And the disciples, on the other hand, I mean, they went back to the upper room, which was the last place they'd been with Jesus. I mean, that's the next time you see them together after he's died. And, but I never really thought about what made them a cohesive group, except for the fact that you kind of feel like you'd go, well, now what do we do?
Yeah.
What? we have nothing to do. I mean, not to do, but I mean, we have no, our master died, and who meant more than any master,
mm-hmm.
you know, our best friend. And but you're right. Part of it is that threat, because when Jesus appears to them after he's resurrected, the door is locked. But suddenly Jesus appears. You know, the door is locked because they're afraid.
That's right.
He goes through the wall or through the door. He just appears in the middle of the room, which is why he has to say, oh, no, no, you can hear. You want to touch my wounds? Give me some fish. I'll eat. You know, because it's so unbelievable.
Amazing.
Right. It's fear that at that point, you can imagine it's bewilderment, loss, grief, and fear. Because look how Peter was. And they were like, you were with him. Oh, no. Mm-mm. Yeah, you got that crazy Galilean, I always imagine it being like a Mississippi or a very identifiable accent.
Well, yeah, that is something. And then we have one betrayer, too.
Mm-hmm.
In the Dirty Dozen as well as in the Bible. But right. But Savalas was really spooky weird. I don't know if Judas was, but I mean...
No,
Telly Savalas is one of those guys that would be hard, you know, to be in the room with.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, man, you're creeping me out.
Yeah.
And then he betrayed him in the bit.
But, of course, he wasn't in his right mind at all.
Any time.
No, but he was really psycho gone by the time he grabbed that girl. You know, she walks in, you're like, oh, my gosh. Of course you're not going to go into the bedroom Jim Brown's in. He'd just hide.
I asked why didn't Lee Marvin get rid of Telly Savalas, but why didn't Jesus get rid of Judas?
Well, he was giving him a chance up to the last second.
That's right, he was. And was Lee Marvin doing the same thing? I don't know what he was doing.
I don't see him as altruistic in any way.
You're trying to think of what motivated Lee Marvin in the Dirty Dozen.
A bad script.
Yeah.
Bad moment in the script. In fact, I was reading something because it was talking about some of these people had actually been in the war. And so Lee Marvin had been in the war, and he would, you know, do a little correcting of, oh, well, we would do this with the gun, or we should do that to make it accurate. And at one point, he complained to the director and said, this is totally not how it should work, or about something, I don't know what. And the director's like, none of this is real, man. Like, I'm like, it's not a documentary we're making here. He goes, I'm going to give them a great adventure story. That's what we're doing here. They're not going to care if it's wrong. You know, how they hold the gun or how they do this or that, you know.
Right.
And he went, oh, okay.
How funny.
Yeah. I like that he cared that much.
Yeah, me too.
The gun's all wrong.
Me too. That is neat. And I like Lee Marvin. Most of the things I've seen him in is war movies. But I do like him.
Yeah, I do. I like him a lot more now that I can appreciate his acting. When I was younger, he was just so tough seeming all the time. I found him off-putting because he's not good looking enough to offset that for a girl, like, you know, teenager or high school kid.
Right.
I wasn't that much of an appreciator at the time. But I watched him in this movie. And I was just like, man, he is 100% there all the time. He's just so good.
Yeah, he sure is. I'm looking at his filmography, and his second to last movie was The Dirty Dozen, Next Mission.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, no.
It was so...
It looks like it was a TV movie.
Oh.
In 1985, Ernest Borgnine was in it.
I don't stop. It hurts.
All right, so that's what you're getting for Christmas.
Thank you. I'll let you know as soon as I watch it.
Oh, that's too funny. Oh,
gracious. Well, when I was going through looking at war movies, and I can't remember what I think because I was looking going, what are my favorite war movies? And I could only come up with The Great Escape and The Dirty Dozen.
Huh.
Both great movies, of course.
I love them both, yeah.
Yeah. And then, so I went and started looking at lists of war movies. And some of them are predominantly modern movie lists. And so I was like, no, no Quentin Tarantino, no this or that. Because when I think of war movies, I think of the older war movies. And I know good modern ones have been made, but I just haven't watched any of those. I think maybe because of that more realistic edge they have.
I think, yeah, that may be it. I've seen a lot of the old ones too, but when I think about World War II, I think about Saving Private Ryan. And I think about Band of Brothers.
Which I'd like to see, but I haven't seen that,
that
one.
That really is good. You know, that one is intense. I think you'd enjoy it, though. It's one of those things you probably watch once. But yeah, Band of Brothers was kind of special because, you know, I don't remember all the details, but I have a great uncle that was in that same region during what Band of Brothers did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think. I can't remember what Band of Brothers was about, a specific I don't
battle
know what to call it. A troop. Not a battle, but Band of Brothers is a series. So
that's what I thought. And then you said that and I went, oh, okay, a movie, okay.
Yeah. It was, you know, a mini series, I guess you'd call it, right?
But it has Matt Damon, right?
There it is. So yeah. Band of Brothers doesn't. But
I have to remember the essentials. Matt Damon, is that what we're talking about?
No, I don't. Matt Damon's not in this one.
Okay.
On Band of Brothers. Okay, so it's 101st Airborne U.S. Army Division, and their mission in World War II Europe, from Operation Overlord through VJ Day. And it's like, I don't know, 6 episodes or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
10
mm-hmm.
episodes. It's 10 episodes. So, but it is incredible.
I feel like my husband would love it.
Oh, your husband would really love it.
I mean, I'd like it too, I'm sure. But I feel like he'd love it. We've talked about watching that before.
Right. And I have, from my great uncle, I had his daughter. So what does that make her? My aunt in some way. His daughter, one time when I was, you know, really into the World War II movies and things, I just said, you know, what did he do? And, you know, because I was curious. And she sent me a photocopy of... he carried a notebook with him, and all he did was write the towns that he was in and the date. So I'm in this town and this date. That's all he'd write. It wasn't like a journal.
Interesting.
But it was really interesting. And, it was pretty much Band of Brothers.
Wow.
Something else. Yeah. Yeah. But, Saving Private Ryan was terrific too. Have you seen that?
Well, no, and I've heard it's good, but I don't know. I just didn't feel a pull to watch it for any reason. I mean, I love Tom Hanks, and wasn't that Steven Spielberg? He's always good. Well, not always, but often, quite often, very good. I know this is one of his big ones, but I think because I knew it would be more realistic, maybe, and it's not that I.
And it definitely was. The opening of Save It Private Ryan.
I just want to see brains going everywhere.
It's tough to watch. Yeah, it's
I just didn't feel like that. I
can't believe that people did that.
Well, and I have to say, I just finished watching with, you know, that movie group I do. We just finished a double feature. Well, it was two different periods, but it was contrast and compare. So first we watched American Sniper.
I haven't seen it. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, it's somebody there had seen it and she loved it. So we watched it. It wouldn't have been my choice, but it was well done. Good. I like Clint Eastwood, you know, love Bradley Cooper, love him. And he's wonderful in this. And it was not one of those movies that made you, you know, sit there and cry for the poor soldiers. I don't like the ones that are obviously tugging your heartstrings like that.
Yeah.
But you are looking at this soldier's life. And then to go with that, we watched Sergeant York, which is about World War I, but it's the same sort of a situation. They were both crack marksmen. They both were elevated by the circumstances they were in, albeit very different because the wars are very different kinds of wars, to be heroes or heroic. And they were 100 years apart. These stories, these men lived it. One was in the 1914 war and the other one was in, you know, 2013, 2014 in Iraq and everything. So it was really interesting to look at both those. But I have to say, I felt like in Sergeant York, they have the battle scenes, And they seemed so realistic, you know, because they're blowing up charges and stuff's falling on the guys. And, you know, they didn't have special effects other than that back then. And it was so loud and so violent, and they were pinned down by machine guns. And I was like, I think that's as much realism as I need. I can project everything else myself. I don't need to see somebody's brains being blown out, literally. That was a long way to go to get to that point.
I understand.
But both movies are excellent, and I definitely recommend watching them as a pairing.
Yeah, that's neat to watch it as a pair. That's really a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Yeah, lots to talk about that way.
Yeah.
I was thinking, when I think about war scenes, I think the first movie that I saw that really affected me, you know, in a way, when I was watching it, I was into it enough where I was like, oh my goodness, you know, that would mm-hmm. be so difficult to be in that situation, was Braveheart, which is... You know, that was swords and shields and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it has been so long since I've seen that movie, but I don't know if it was the age I was when I saw it or whatever, but they're running, screaming, yelling, and running at each other, and then mm-hmm. These two masses of people just kind of, you know, become Converge. One mass of people, and they're, you know, sprinting, and I was just like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So how do you make it through that? And, you know, clearly people did, but a lot of people didn't. It's just incredible what we do to each other.
Well, there's the theory, I kind of almost subscribe to it, of that's almost the way war really should be, because then you have to really care before you get that personally invested and close to it.
Wow, there's
as opposed to watch on a camera and push a button.
Yeah, you say that. There was a... I think it's called Gatekeepers.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Is that what it's called? Yes, that's it. It's a documentary called The Gatekeepers from 2012. Okay. A documentary featuring interviews with all the surviving former heads of Shin Bet, which is the Israeli secret or security agency whose activities and membership are closely held state secrets. But it's a really good, very, very, very interesting. And it's really interviews with these guys and some Israeli history.
Hmm.
And one of the things one of them said, in fact, I think that the movie opens with this, is him talking about pushing a button to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And how that affected him. It's not, you know, it wasn't like, yay, we get to do this, but... It's just like, this is the world we're in now where, you know, all we need to do is press this button and somebody's dead.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to do is know where he is.
I'm trying to remember the movie that I saw where both of us, we saw it at the movies and we both came away going, wow, we'd never thought about it. And it might have been one of the Jack Ryan movies with Harrison Ford, you know, where...
Yeah.
He's given the tip, and then they go, well, you should come in and see this. And they're watching on a huge screen as people, gorillas, go into a camp and start shooting people. And they're like, job well done. And he's kind of, whatever movie this was, and please correct me if anybody knows.
I think, you know, it's probably Patriot Games.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, but I think I know exactly what you're saying. And then they're in there, they're watching the thing happen.
Yeah, and he's disturbed by it, you can see. And we came away with going... That was the first time we'd ever thought about it or ever seen that kind of warfare acted out in front of us in a movie, for one thing. Yeah. And we just came out thinking, there's something dangerous in that. At least for
people who are
pushing you around.
Yeah, you know, I'm not trying to single out any president or anything like that.
No.
But there's, you know, remember when bin Laden got killed?
Mm-hmm.
They released a photo from the White House of, you know, President Obama... in a room like that.
That's right.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember that picture really clearly,
mm-hmm.
where he was sitting there with other people. Well, in fact, Hillary Clinton was in there too.
And, sure, she was Secretary of State at the
time,
probably.
That's right. She was Secretary of State at the time. So, it's just stunning to think that that's where we're at, where it's like, you know, Mr. President, we're about to kill this guy. Do you want to come watch the operation? And he's like, well, okay.
Well,
you know, it's a tough deal, you know, being a president, man. That's tough stuff.
I know, hard to make those decisions. And well, also though, doesn't that almost harken back to, oh gosh, why am I thinking of, like, I'm sure this is the wrong time period, but in some like medieval times or whatever, weren't there cases where the king wasn't leading everybody into battle, but they might be observing from a high hill somewhere else?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
You know, so that's a similar, it's not exactly the same.
Yeah.
But it's that similar thing of, yeah, I don't know.
It's tough, you know. I sure wish a lot of things that we had never been invented. But
I know.
How do you go back?
Right.
Oh, how to go back.
Right. Well, yeah, you can't. You can't go back. You can't put Pandora back. You can't close that Pandora's box. But you can just try to work to make sure that the stuff that is invented is used for good.
True.
The right reason.
Yeah.
And that's a great part of the struggle that we see these days, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I mean, medicine is a good thing. Biowarfare is a terrible thing. You know, so you have to not do biowarfare and try to keep your people safe from that.
Yeah.
Who would ever think when you invented, you know, when penicillin was invented, yay! Or any of these other things. You don't think of them taking it the other way.
Yeah, true.
But so something else I wanted to talk about, just a springboard from the Dirty Dozen, was the power of second chances.
Great.
Because all these guys get a second chance, and for whatever reason they take them, you know, they're all afraid of dying, or, you know, 20 years hard labor or whatever it is. And they're promised something good as a result. And of course it's a slaughter. I kept the whole time, I have to say, another hole in the whole thing was all these people, they're sneaking around to do their mission, and they're, you know, there's one guard coming around. That's it. And I'm like, wait a minute. You mean to tell me there aren't guys got all these, this brass here, and there aren't guards everywhere? There's just a couple guys on the gate, and this guy and a suspicious guy with the signature book. That's it.
That's so true. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought of that, but okay. They were popping up like crazy later on. I was thinking about second chances, and this, I guess, goes along with you can act valiantly if you're in the right circumstances, but the second chance itself, whatever happens as a result of it, just the action of going through and getting another chance and working toward that is redemptive. Mm. It changes you. That's been my experience anyway. And I realize that's kind of a far way to go because this movie, you know, not super deep. But all these guys got those second chances, and most of them stepped up.
Yeah.
And
we definitely all need some of that. There's no question. There's no question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get into confession and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Starting over, but absolutely right. That is an interesting point about the movie, too, because, yeah, that was something all 12 of them had in common.
Well, and it was Lee Marvin's second chance, too.
It was. I mean, yeah, so 13.
Yeah. Our baker's dozen.
That's right. And thank heaven for those bakers throwing in that extra one.
Oh, God bless them. They're good folk.
Yeah. That they are.
I'm going to save this clip, and the next time I go to a donut place, I'm going to play it for them. That was me, by the way. I could use that.
That's too funny.
Well, do you have a favorite war movie?
A favorite war movie? Wow. I'd have to say Band of Brothers. I know that's a series,
okay.
But that's,
well, that's okay.
I just absolutely think that is a masterpiece.
Okay.
Well, you know, never having been in war myself, you know, I don't know, but that. And then as far as a book goes, The Killer Angels.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah, that is something else. That was a book, you know, we talked about it on the podcast here. And in fact,
I
should look up which number it is. But that book really, I felt like I was there a little bit. You know, when you read that book, I felt like I was feeling what some of those people felt. Episode 36, if you're interested. Okay. The Killer Angels by Michael Schirra. That's we talked about that at length.
Yeah, because you not only felt like you understood what they were going through, but you also understood both sides better. And like I said, you know, totally anti-slavery, totally the South had to lose, needed to happen, but I wanted both sides to win, you know. And I guess in a sense that, you know, with the Dirty Dozen, where after I said, oh, well, you know, it was Nazis, so, you know, you knew you had the bad side. But then I was thinking about what happened to him at the end, and I'm like, but they didn't deserve that. I knew it had to happen because that was the mission and we're all going for it. Nobody's worrying about that in 1967, which is also kind of refreshing, you know.
Yeah. So did you say that your favorites were this one and The Great Escape?
Oh, yeah.
Those are your favorite works.
Well, The Great Escape's really my favorite.
All right. Cool.
Come on. Who doesn't love that? But I haven't watched that many. Although when I was going through those lists, I did see one where I said, oh, my gosh. And it's Lee Marvin. I remember seeing, and this is the value, I guess, of having, not having DVDs all the time and streaming everything, is you had to catch movies, you know, Saturday afternoon reruns or Sunday night reruns late after every normal programming is done. And this is when you'd see all these old movies being rerun. And I thought, I remember there was a black and white movie, and it was about a guy, a soldier, who was marooned on this island. And he had a cave and some boxes of Japanese stuff he was eating. And it was disgusting because it was raw fish or whatever, but he had to eat it. And as I was going through those lists, I found it. And that was Lee Marvin and a famous Japanese actor, too. I didn't remember that it was just him, this Japanese guy on this island trying to survive. But I want to watch that movie now.
Oh, cool.
Because I remember loving it. I'd just come across it so many times, I kind of knew it. But
that's cool. You know, off the beaten path World War II movie that I really liked was called Victory, which was Sylvester Stallone was in it, and it was a soccer movie.
I saw that. It was
soccer. Okay. Yeah, a soccer World War II movie. Oh,
well, of course so you liked it. It was soccer.
They were prisoners trying to escape. You know, I saw this movie a long time ago. Yeah. I have no idea. I'd probably watch it now and go, oh, geez, that's what. It may be a horrible movie, but I remember enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I don't recall it being horrible. I just recall it being like, oh, yeah, it was fine, you know.
Yeah.
But if you liked it a lot, there's something for everyone, you know.
There's sometimes when you watch and you watch it like years later, you're like, what?
Well, I'm trying
to change. People
change. Yeah, well, that's the thing. What happened? Yeah, the way I watch movies now is very different, too.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Me too.
Thanks to you. And this
podcast. Thanks to you. Yeah.
Oh, well, then mutual. But there was also a series, and it was I guess it was a documentary series. Was it called Battlefield? And it was really fascinating. And we watched a whole bunch of them, and they might have been PBS. And what they would do is take all these different battles, and they'd start off with the big, I think it was a big clock, but they would show you, here's what this side had. Here's what the Nazis had. Here's what the Americans had, or the, you know, the Allies had. Here's where they were fighting. Here's how everybody was set up. Here were the orders everybody had.
Oh, wow.
And then they'd show you what happened.
Wow.
And I think Battlefield was the name of it.
Cool.
But it's one that actually I really enjoyed watching, and I care nothing about tank configurations, but I liked the whole thing. It really laid it out well, and you could see where things went right and wrong, and it was really fascinating.
Oh, cool. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
It looks like there was six series of it.
I was going to say, I thought there were several seasons, because they were doing, you know, of course they do the Pacific and... Mm-hmm. Air battles and
so series one in 1994, the Battle of France, the Battle of Britain, Battle of Midway, Stalingrad, Normandy, and Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next series is another six episodes. The next series is the Vietnam War.
Oh, okay. I think we just watched the World War II ones.
Interesting. Neat. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Cool. I think you might like it.
I will. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Cool. This is a fun movie. I can't believe where we went from this movie, but
well,
I like it. That's fun.
We had to go somewhere because there was not much to dig into. That's, but I just thought I like it so much. And it's then when I read how violent it was and how it changed everything, I went, what does that say about me that I like it so much? But, you know, everybody likes an
underdog. It's time for a remake with Bradley Cooper can be in it.
Oh,
and
all right, I'll watch it.
Carl Urban can also be in it.
Oh, all right, I'll watch it.
Oh, two guys. That's all that's going to be in it.
That's, you could have whoever else you want for the rest. That's all I need.
Oh, too.
Ooh,
good.
Maybe the guy who I can't remember, Michael somebody, who was Carl Urban's partner in Almost Human.
Oh yeah,
he could play Jim Brown's character.
Okay,
if you have to have a straight remake.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Too funny.
Yeah.
I'll have to pick someone odd for Telly Savalas' part.
Oh man. Jack Black.
I don't know. Can you do it?
I don't think he could be creepy enough.
I don't know if he could be creepy enough either, because that is genuinely creepy.
Oh my gosh. Of course, I always found Telly Savalas a little creepy. I never liked watching Kojak. I don't care if he always had a lollipop or not, or Tootsie Pop or not. Nope.
Not your show.
I think I was ruined by the Dirty Dozen.
Maybe Kevin Spacey could play Savalas' part.
He's a bit old, but yeah.
But he could be crazy.
He can definitely do that.
He can do it.
Yeah. Well, I think we've wrung every bit of conversation out of this.
I think so, too. All right. So what do we have coming up next? In 2 weeks, Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Oh, yeah.
By Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading a little bit about it. And, you know, speaking of war and things, I guess it's apocryphal, but... there was a story going around for a long time that Lincoln said when he met her that she started the war or something. Have you read
that? Yeah, so this is the little lady whose book started this big, great big war or something like that. Yeah.
So that's probably not true?
Well, they just said nobody ever confirmed it one way or the other. So she wrote a letter to her, some relative, sister or somebody, that about meeting him, and she didn't mention that. And they said, so, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. She might not have bragged about it. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I like to think it happened because it definitely influenced everything. I mean, they say Horace Greeley was reading it on the train back somewhere, and he was crying so hard over one section that he had to stop overnight at a town. He had to break his journey up so he could kind of recover from reading the book.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that?
I have been actually, I was listening to my own reading of it on Forgotten Classics.
Mm-hmm.
I tried a few other readings and I kept going, I don't like this about this one. I don't like that about that one. I finally went, well, mine can't be worse than these. And actually, I guess this is bragging, but I actually wound up really liking my reading.
Wonderful.
Because I did it back in 2009, so I could listen fairly objectively, expecting it to be awful. And for anybody who is interested, what I really like is that because I knew it was such a touchy book, I did a lot of commentary before and after each episode.
Oh, cool.
So even if you don't want to listen to me read it, which I can completely understand, if you want to get some other commentary, if you just download the episodes and listen to right before and right after, and, you know, as well as people's comments and things like that.
Excellent.
So,
yeah, well, after this recording, I'll tweet that out and we'll put it in our post as well.
Oh, okay.
A link to this. So,
yeah, good. Okay.
Got it right in front of me here. hcforgottenclassics.blogspot.com.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, and I'm well into the book. So.
Oh, good.
Nice. Yeah, it's something else.
Is it okay so far?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, good. Something else is good.
Oh, okay, got it.
Something else. No, no.
Made me nervous.
No, heavens no.
It's, good,
it's,
okay. It,
yeah, it's one of those books I think I'm going to be glad to have read.
Oh, good.
So after that, we're going to do Ben-Hur.
cannot wait.
Starring Carl Urban. No, I'm sorry.
No, too much emotional projection for a Charlton Heston replacement.
That's right, Charlton Heston. Yeah.
Although who could not love Charlton Heston in this role? It's just wonderful.
That's right. Cool.
Yeah.
And then we're going to read a book called Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage by Alfred Lansing. Yeah.
Shackleton went, where did Shackleton go on his incredible voyage?
Antarctic, right?
Yes.
The South Pole.
Perfect reading for Indian summer days.
That's right.
Will it be September?
It's going to be September. Early September.
Okay.
Yep. Tom Brady still won't be playing football, but it's early September.
And deservedly so. The wrath of thousands comes down on me if thousands listened.
Should I keep going or should we save the rest for another time?
It's up to you.
Okay, I'll just mention them. Okay. September 25th or so, we're going to do Les Miserables, the movie. I know there's several versions of the movie. We probably better put a date on that.
Oh, yeah, 2012, yeah. I guess. I need to put 12? That on there. Yep. Was that it? 2013? Whenever. Hugh Jackman,
right.
And I said that to my husband. He goes, and Anne Hathaway, by the way. There's something for everyone in that movie. Okay.
Got it. Too good. Yeah. And then we're into October, and our October picks are fun. The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde by Robert Louis Stevenson, which I have never read.
Oh!
Excited about that. That's going to be great.
Oh, what a treat you have ahead of you.
So I love it. And then... I love it.
I know.
That is such a good movie. I mean, it's a surprisingly excellent movie.
I saw it for the first time last year, and I could not believe how I fell in love with it right away.
Yeah,
it was crazy. So
How fun.
Yeah.
After that, I'm up again to pick a couple, so I'll wait a couple weeks. So
I was going to say, we have several months worth there. We just got enthusiastic and started throwing things at the sidebar.
That's right. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, thank you very much.
Hope you enjoyed The Dirty Dozen.
Yes, go watch it if you haven't, or watch it again.
Yes.
I don't think you can watch it too many times.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, take care, everybody. See you soon.
Talk to you in a couple weeks. Bye. Bye.